Right, we're continuing in our study which we started last time about romanticizing life. And tonight we're going to be looking at romanticizing the family. When you have a romantic view about some aspect of life, in other words, when what something should look like or what its purpose is, you have a romantic view about what that should be, then you open yourself up for all kinds of discouragement, frustration, and ultimately ineffectiveness. When we romanticize the family, we are in essence undermining the whole of society. Because when we do this, romanticize of the family, this will result in weak families, it will create weak churches and weak nations. If you do not get it right in the family, then we get it wrong everywhere. One of the primary ways we get it wrong in the family is by having this romantic view about what the family is meant to be, how it looks, how it works, and how we get it to be effective. How many of the people in the world even ask themselves what the purpose of the family is before they have a family? Why am I going to have a family? What is the purpose here? What is the objective and the goal? I believe God has placed the desire for a family within people, much like the desire to have companionship and be in fellowship with others. There's a natural desire. That's what's driving most people in the world to get married. We want to be together. We want to have this family. Many want a family because something within them is calling to be fulfilled. But in essence, their reasons for having a family are because they are seeking self-fulfillment. Something that they want or some desire they have, or that this is just the accepted norm. Well, people get married, they have families, and that's what we do. Thus, a boy and a girl is the perfect family in such a scenario because you get the full spectrum of diversity and the family relationships and that. And that's why a lot of people would say, when we've got two, that's it. We've got our complete family because we've got the thing of what a boy contributes and what a girl contributes, and that's it. You have a child or two, and then we can get on with some grandchildren. Because that's nice to have grandchildren. Grandchildren, great fun to have grandchildren coming around and bouncing them on your knee. It's nice to give them gifts and see their excitement and their joy. And really, that's how people think about the family. It's very self-centered, you know, their feelings and their emotions. I want to spoil my grandchildren one day. So there are many self-serving reasons for having a family. But in many respects, this is just romanticizing what the family is. It's giving an interpretation and a perspective that is very man-focused and centered. The romancing of the family really is a huge billion-dollar industry. It's Babies R Us, you know. It's a romantic view people have. They get the baby home and it's a very matching this and matching that. And everything is just coordinated and real neat. I'm not saying there's anything wrong necessarily in that, but what it's doing many times, and what that is just accentuating or underlining, is this romantic view. There's this perfect little being comes into your home and everything just fits together and is real neat. If you're an encyclopedia salesman, it's the time to hit the family. They're having these great views and visions of where this child's going to go, and, you know, can sell it to and got newborns. That you'll sell a set to them quickly as they have these great aspirations and romantic views even about education and knowledge and what this child is going to accomplish. There's nothing wrong with dreams and hopes for our children. However, if these are the grounds for what the family is about in our mind, then it's not grounded in reality of why the family exists and how it is made effective. And if that's not what our focus is, or what is the purpose of this family, what grounds the family, how do we be effective as a family, that's not what is motivating you. You have a romantic view. You're being led by something else. Something else is directing and pulling you down this path. So what is the purpose of the family? The family really is not only the boot camp to prepare God's warriors for battle, but it is also the main fighting unit in God's kingdom. It's actually what it is, and that's what we need to have in our minds. It is the boot camp for training warriors, for it is the main unit for fighting the battles of the kingdom. Psalm 127 tells us, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward, like arrows in the hand of a warrior. So are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but shall speak with their enemies in the gate." See, that's clearly, we're talking here military terms. We're talking about dominion. We're talking about authority and governance and things like that. The family is the place where God's weapons are prepared for the great kingdom battles. The gate here in this verse, they speak with their enemy in the gate. The gate in the Old Testament was the place in the city that represented the city's authority. It represented the control. This is what controlled the city. This is what protected the city. This is where the authority resided. So the speaking to the enemies in the gates talks about engaging with the enemy at the very core of life's authority and control. It has to do with conflict and overcoming or subduing those enemies, which ultimately are God's enemies. My enemies are in the gates, in positions of authority, and they need to be overcome. Those are God's enemies. So arrows, to be effective weapons, which they clearly are meant to be in these verses, are to be carefully prepared. Most of you here are pretty familiar with bows and arrows. Even if you haven't shot a compound bow, you'll know how important it is to pick a good arrow, even if you're shooting a recurve bow. The arrow is vital. If you've got flights missing or the arrow is curved to one side. I used to make arrows when I was a kid, not even out of doweling. I was kind of cutting branches off trees and very ineffective and unable to hit the mark. And if you're hunting, which I know many of you have at least tried, you know that you don't get multiple shots to hit your target. If you've got a bow and arrow and you're after some game, you don't get multiple shots. It's one shot. And so then you realize, you know, it's important that I have a bunch of good arrows and I need to put a good arrow onto my string. Otherwise, that chance I have is gone and I've missed it. Now, when you're fighting an enemy, it just expands the critical nature of having a good arrow on your string. Because at this stage, your enemy is somebody who's able to fight back. And he could be shooting at you unless you get him first. And so it makes all the more need for an exceptional arrow. This becomes a vital aspect of your whole preparation and readiness. So the ultimate reason we have children is for kingdom work. This is God's means of advancing his purposes on earth through families, through blessing us with children who are then shaped into precise arrows so that they might conquer God's enemies. God called Abraham for the purpose of instructing his children in the Lord's ways. We talked about that before in Genesis 18:19. He will instruct him. I have called him so that he might instruct his children in these ways. And then Genesis 22 and verse 17 says, so that his seed would possess the gates of his enemies. So Abraham is called. He's going to instruct children in his ways so that his seed will possess the gates of his enemies. Ultimately, it's Christ, but we cannot take away from the fact here that Abraham's seed and children passed on. This is an important thrust of what God is doing. So God said that the goal, Abraham, the goal I promised you, I promised I'd give you the seed, and this is why. To possess the gates of your enemy. That's what the goal is for. That's the objective. That's the purpose that I have given you seed. To possess the gates. Thus, Abraham, you need to be about my business of preparing the seed for the advancing of my kingdom. So children and a family are a blessing, but these blessings flow from kingdom purpose and kingdom focus. The family doesn't exist for either the parents or the children. It exists for the kingdom. Thus parents and children are not to romance what the family is like or what it is for. It's not there to serve our whims. It's not there to serve and satisfy our desires in a certain way. Parents are preparing their children for vital battles in the kingdom, and this preparation requires tremendous time, effort, and precision. Parents need to know how to do this. And if they find that they are first generation believers, many of us in this room would be put in that camp, first generation parents trying to train children, just coming to an understanding of the importance, the centrality, and the significance of what this responsibility is that rests upon us. And then there's a lot of catch up that has to be done. Because somebody like that is trying to learn what the responsibilities are, as well as at the same time applying it to children that they already have, and it is a difficult time. Because life doesn't wait for us. You can't pull the switch. I wish you could. And say, you know, can I just get 5 years somewhere where I can learn some things before we can click back into life and pick up from where we were able to stop it? It doesn't do that. The catch-up game is very difficult. What you've got is children are growing, and the time that the parent has with that child is shrinking as they're trying to equip them and prepare them and get them ready for life. And so that's where the tension and the pressure comes in. As things keep moving, as the parent is effectively trying to prepare their arrows. And so it takes much sacrifice, but it also takes great focus upon the tasks that are hard, which is making arrows. Making arrows is a hard task. That's what we are doing. As we are fighting against our own sin, as we're doing this, denying ourselves, subduing our own flesh, trying to gain the wisdom so we can impart true stuff on, we're fighting against the sin in our children, where their sin is rebelling against this truth, against this way their flesh is resisting it to a certain degree, as they are struggling to walk that path. And as we're also being bombarded from the world with all the ideas and impressions of what the family is to look like, what it would be, what the perfect family is. If only we could do this. And children are getting ideas, parents are getting ideas and getting bombarded, and it creates great struggle and confusion. And those ideas, for the most part, that are being thrown at us from all sides are really romantic views of the family, and trying to convince us that if we just did it this way, we would realize how good and wonderful it is. So to succeed in this calling requires diligence on the part of parents. It requires understanding of the nature of the conflict that you're in. It requires understanding the material you are working upon. You've got to know the arrows you're working on, their nature and all those details. And you love those movies where a really troubled child is turned around by one conversation, becomes a model kid. It'd be wonderful if that's how it was, if that's how it could work. You know, I just sat down and gave him this tremendous speech, very heartwarming and moving speech, and bam, he was different. He was a different kid from then on. Unfortunately, as wonderful as that would be, it's not how life works. It's a lot more difficult than that and requires constant supervision, coaching, encouragement, correction, repetition, practice, and then some more practice as we practice these things in our own lives and in the lives of our children. Part of the reason for this drawn-out process of achieving the end product is because God is not only working on our children, He's working at the same time on us and conforming us more and more into the image of Christ. He's working in us things like patience and long-suffering, kindness and gentleness, courage, as we have the courage to carry out the leadership in this way and expect our children to comply. We're learning justice, we're learning diligence and self-sacrifice, and the list could go on and on. All these are needed in the preparation of good arrows and are also qualities that are learned by us in the context of the family. That's the great place where these things are learned by us. God still expects parents to speak in a controlled way when it's the 12th time talking about doing something. He does. For some reason, He does. I don't know why He does, but He does. No, I do know why He does. Because we have to learn patience and self-control. There is no excuse for getting angry or expressing frustration in your tone. If the reminding is not working, then you need to realize that another strategy must be used. But while you come up with a new strategy, somehow me saying this isn't working, I need to come up with a new strategy. Then you have to come up with a new strategy and develop a new way to communicate something that is going to be learned. But at the same time, you are bound to manifest patience and self-control. It is usually because as parents we don't have the courage or it could be know-how, but sometimes it's just maybe not taking the time and the effort to come up with a strategy that works that we would resort to anger. Because anger communicates it. It enables you to get the job done sometimes. It, you know, makes the point and raising your voice. And really, when you get angry, you are implementing another strategy. I first asked you nicely and now you didn't listen, so the change of strategy is now I'm going to get angry and hopefully you'll listen. Whereas that really is not the right change of strategy that I'm talking about. You want to come up with a different strategy that works. And it's not easy to come up with strategies to help hone this arrow that it's going to fly straight and true. So meaningful change is not attained through anger, but through wisdom and careful training. If life is too busy, then there isn't sufficient time to train character. You can't deal with a situation where there is constant external pressure to be here, there, and everywhere at the same time trying to deal with character, because what you'll find out is that character just gets left behind because the pressure to be somewhere, the pressure to accomplish something, the external pressure from outside, expectations of people, really drowns out your ability to spend the time, slow down and say, okay, we've got to deal with this issue. We have something that needs to be sorted out. So time is a valuable thing in preparing arrows, and we need to guard our time in order to accomplish that task. So you've got to weigh up, okay, what is my primary responsibility here? It's making an arrow. It's making an arrow to be effective in the battles of the Lord. And therefore, when things start to undermine my ability to prepare this arrow, I have to realize that those are threatening the purpose of the family's existence. You see, it's not possible to make good arrows while galloping on the back of a horse, I assure you. Now, you might arrive at the battle with a lot of arrows in hand, but they are not going to be effective arrows. And so slowing down and making sure we have time, and what that looks like in every family is different, and the dynamics are different. But we need to be sensitive. Okay, what is being neglected here, and where can I get the time to sort out these arrows? The next generation goes forth into battle with arrows that are defective, as arrows that are defective. Then they are not going to possess the gates of their enemy. The enemy is going to possess their gate. And when the salt loses its savor, it is trodden under the feet of men. And that's exactly what will happen if arrows are not adequately prepared. To possess our enemy's gates requires a tremendous amount of time to be given to preparing these arrows. God's arrows, which He has given to us to prepare for Him, actually. But this is hard work. It's time consuming. It demands diligence and selflessness on the part of parents to achieve these goals. We're not to think that we will be able to prepare these arrows entrusted to us in the time that's left over after we've done all the things that tantalize us. There's lots of things in this world that attract us, things that we would like to spend our time on, things we'd like to commit ourselves to. We cannot do those and then think, well, I can fit in arrow making on the sideline here as a part-time job. The world gives us the impression that we can have a model family as well as, and I'm not picking on anything in particular, I'm just throwing out whatever, play golf and attend ball games and do all kinds of other activities where the world is constantly calling us. That doesn't mean you can never do any of these things that I've said. There's a realization that what my priorities need to be. Because the world gives us things and says these are necessary things. I know people that would swear absolutely that unless they can play golf a couple of times a week, they are not getting what is vital and necessary to their life. Their own recreation, my time, I've got to have this. It's a mindset that you buy into. It's a worldview that is communicated and you buy it and then you live your life according to it. These are activities that parents need to do if I'm going to stay sane. Me time. Well, great blessings are promised to those who prepare God's arrows in God's way. However, these blessings must not be equated with our own desires for pleasure and fun. If you are basing your sense of satisfaction in the family upon false expectations or goals, you will become discouraged. You'll be offended by the time it requires. This just takes too much time. By the often apparent slow progress that is being made. Why are things not moving faster than this? By the failures, by demands upon your time and your energy. I don't have energy anymore for this. You see, preparing arrows for real battles requires lots and lots of hands-on effort and involvement. Parenting is not done from the comfort of an armchair. Armchair footballers and armchair parents believe they're the best around. They're the best ones out there. And you see these armchair footballers. They knew every move that could have been made, and they would have done it better if they had had the ball. But that's not how parenting is done either. It's only those who sacrifice themselves and flee to the Lord for His wisdom and grace to do all things according to His truth that will have a realistic view of the family and thus be effective in doing family well. So parents can romanticize what the family looks like, and as a result of that they can become frustrated in what they're doing or not commit themselves wholeheartedly to what they're doing. But children can also romanticize what the family is meant to be like. Do you know that nothing, if you study whatever field you're going to study, whatever discipline, when you're talking about government, that's obvious. You're talking about science. The more you study it and the more detailed you get into studying it, you see that there's nothing in this universe that functions without laws. It's all laws behind it all, functioning and tied together. And this connects to that and does this when this happens here. Because this is God's world. That's how He made it. The more people learn about the world, the more they see the structure and the law behind it. And they see the order. And so without order and laws, we would be in an evolutionary world of chaos. That's what we'd be in. Exactly those kinds of chaotic things happening that the evolutionists try to convince us did happen or are happening. Now, the family is the primary place of learning how to live in this world. The laws of nature and the laws of nations are learned and practiced in the family. Obedience, respect, honor, diligence, hard work, self-sacrifice, and on. Make those lists. All those things are learned in the family. All those things that are vital to every area of life are learned in the family. They're all have their birth and their first instruction is received on the family level, in the family context. The family is God's ordained boot camp for mastering these necessary skills. So it's to have a romantic view of life when you think that you'll just adopt good character qualities without learning them. If you do not learn dependability through constantly practicing being dependable, then you will not be a person that can be depended upon. This person is not dependable. He's never learned the discipline of being dependable. How can someone succeed in life if they are incapable of following instructions? How do you accomplish anything if you can't follow basic instructions? There are many habits that are vital to functioning in this world that are learned in the family. Things that you would think are relatively simple, but are proven not to be so. Simple things that really it requires the family and the repetition and the constant instruction of that whereby these things are learned. So we can think about them and it'll be lovely if, but somehow thinking that would be lovely if is very far from the actual doing it and accomplishing it. Do you know of any of these simple activities that seem to be rather complex in real life? Trying to implement them or trying to be practiced a part of life. You know, something which seems to be simple but actually is complex, like putting something back after you used it. It seems like a simple principle. but it actually turns out to be quite complex. It's something that has to be learned. It's something that has to be trained and practiced, and the family is the context where that is done. And really, when you study that in your family, you say, you know, this is a complex thing, because it's not happening. How about learning to follow through with a routine? You know, you've got smaller children. I know it didn't happen in this age group, but if you've got smaller children, you say, okay, bath time. After bath, you pick up your clothes, you put them in the wash bin, you hang up the towel. If there's clean clothes, you know where to process them. Okay, that's simple. It's done. That's going to take less than a minute, and that routine is done. Now, with younger children, it's a complex thing to learn. It's very difficult. But where is that to be learned? You see, that's where it is learned. That's where it's learned, through simple places. And there's no other place like the family where such things are learned and trained. How about submitting to those in authority over you? This is a vital aspect of life in the home. It's a vital aspect of life in the church and the state. It's everywhere. Submitting to those in authority. Where do you learn that? The fundamental place of learning that is the family. When it's not learned in the family, you're sending people into the world that are incredibly incapable of functioning in a way that is going to be effective. There's no possibility of life continuing without submission to authority. It's a fascinating thing. And we learn it to a certain degree, and God's common grace to people in the world means that we do get people submitting to authority. But if everybody today in the United States had to say, to heck with authority, that would be the end of the United States, literally. It cannot function. It cannot exist. Without the principle of bowing your will to another, we cannot have society. Yet our flesh resists this and fights against bowing to authority. Now, the simple thing that turns out to be incredibly complex. We can sit down philosophically and say, you know, if we did not bow to authority, it would be chaos. And yet our hearts are fighting against bowing to authority. Why? Because we're stubborn and foolish by nature. God says that it's in the family where the stubbornness and foolishness is to be subdued and removed. So if your idea of what your life in the family should look like comes from your flesh, you're going to be very dissatisfied and frustrated. Because your perception of what the family, what its function should be, how it should be laying on for you, and what it should be doing, etc., is going to be across what you find yourself in. You're going to be very dissatisfied with that. The family is not about you. It's not about us. Its focus is not upon fun, but upon transforming the child by the work of the parents into a deadly arrow. That's what it's about. That's what the family's goal is. Transforming this child into a deadly arrow. So the focus is not on fun. Does it mean you can't have fun? No, not at all. Fun is a part of life. But you need to realize that the desires of your flesh, if left unchecked, will make you into a marshmallow gun. That's what you're going to be. If those desires of your flesh are not checked, that's what you're going to be. That's how effective you're going to be. It's as effective as a marshmallow gun, which is certainly will not remove the enemy from the gates. In fact, when you come towards him, he's going to open his mouth. You see, the flesh demands constant fun at once, and that's what it will feed upon. And if it sets up life to be like that, or its picture of life as that, and then demands those things, then it's going to be looking for those things all the time. It despises responsibilities and seeks to get out of doing hard work. That's what it's going to do. Our flesh balks at hard work. Even those who work hard, they work hard because they have disciplined themselves, and they have to constantly keep disciplining themselves to continue working hard. It doesn't just happen. I wish I was like him. He's such a hard worker. No, that didn't just fall out of the sky. It's not kind of a magic potion. It's something that he learned. It's something that he applied himself to. If your view of life in the family looks like this fun and escaping responsibility, then know that you are a marshmallow. It doesn't matter how much you might imagine yourself being tough and hardworking. The fact is, you become what you practice. If you're not practicing the discipline that you're needed, the different disciplines in life, you're not practicing doing hard things and persistently pushing through and stretching yourself and exercising yourself in all these areas of doing hard things, if you're not doing that as a young person, then you're becoming what you're practicing. Do you realize we're always practicing something? The lazy person is practicing laziness. It's not easy to be lazy, you know. You have to practice it. You have to find ways where you can get out of being involved. You have to find ways where you can cut corners. And a lot of that is very complicated sometimes to do. But the lazy person is practicing this discipline. So laziness is practiced and mastered in the same way that hard work has to be practiced in order to master it. So you're romanticizing life in the family if you're picturing yourself becoming something that you are not practicing now. Well, one day that's what I am going to be. Are you practicing it now? Well, I will practice it then. So that's a romantic view of life. It's a romantic view of how this time in the family is to be spent. The family is designed by God to turn us from marshmallows into arrows. to change us from candy fluff into real kingdom weapons that make God's enemies tremble. So the way we achieve this in the dusty working of the family, that's how God achieves it, is through this dusty working of the family. As when the dusty family models its actions and its activities upon the truth of God's word. We need to understand the family. We need to understand its purpose and equipping in the way that God has revealed. And then as parents and as children, we need to give ourselves to this objective of possessing the gates of God's enemies. So I encourage you and I exhort you not to be a romantic marshmallow. Marshmallows are made to be devoured. Arrows are made to conquer. And we are either becoming one or the other. And God has called us to be arrows to conquer our enemies in the gates. The processes for making the marshmallow and making the arrow are very different. God's purposes for the family is that it produces deadly arrows for the advancing of the kingdom by overcoming his enemies. And so really that is, in a nutshell, what the biblical view of the family is. And then as we understand that and we hold to that, we work back to, well, how do I achieve that? What does this look like now? And if we are on the guard and protecting ourselves from our own romancing of what life could be or what we could be, and saying, no, in the dusty details, how do I get from A to B? I can romance about climbing Mount Everest. But unless you start the practice of what is required from the physical perspective and some of the skills that are needed, practicing them and doing them, it is only a romantic view of that I would be able to accomplish that objective. And it's the same with our lives of being arrows for the Lord. And so I trust that we as parents and as children will have a biblical view of the family and deal with our own responsibilities in a God-honoring way.